What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink. We engage you, the listener, and interact on a different topic each week. We've got loads of good tunes, lovely music, and lots of analysis to keep you going. There's always lots of juicy comments and lots of different perspectives. Absolutely,
so stay tuned. Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, figures show that 1 in 3 people living on the African continent are between the ages of 15 and 25. And that is approximately 60% of the continent's total population. This age group is projected to double by 2050. There's obviously great potential in having a population this young, because young people are often the biggest drivers of economic growth in any one society. On the other hand, there is a potential problem when large numbers of young people are without meaningful employment. Research shows that in sub-Saharan Africa, unemployment rates are at around 13%. 51% of young women are unemployed, and young men account for about 43% of the unemployed. Experts attribute part of the reason for high numbers of youth unemployment to the few jobs that are available. The job market has not expanded to accommodate the youth bulge. Some statistics show that in the past decade alone, most of all the jobs created on the continent, which were around 80 million according to some figures, of those, only about 10 million were able to absorb young people. So it's clear that the current pace of job creation in Africa is not able to meet the demands of its fast-growing population. But the problem is not limited on how many jobs are available for young people. Part of the problem has to do with education and the skills necessary to get hired in existing jobs. Most importantly, the education and skills that they acquire from primary, secondary, or college education is not adequate for them to become job creators. And that's why experts continue to emphasize the need for serious reform in African educational systems. One of our guests today, South African social entrepreneur Marlon Parker, reiterates that the current educational regime does little in providing students with the right skills to face an ever-evolving job market. And perhaps that's where technology comes in as this great catalyst for new jobs. We will hear more about Marlon's interesting story later on the show. And we'll also hear about how a young Nigerian lady is preparing students in Calabar State to enter the job market. Her emphasis is on after-school programs. It is clear that certain types of skills are necessary for young people to find work and become contributing members to their local communities. It is also clear that African governments need to step up their efforts if they are to benefit from this demographic dividend. Let's start the conversation. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Rather than taking them to classrooms to study European history and, you know, South African history, you would rather take them to technical schools, give them the skills, and when they come out, they have the hands-on skills to create jobs for themselves, to provide the services that people want out there in the market.
Yeah, I'm Trotsinze Bright. I'm a resident in Kigali, the capital of Rwanda. Youth employment in Africa, especially, let me talk about Rwanda, my country. It's increasing even today through what we call job creation, where it's a government program that tries to tell people not to be job seekers, but to be job creators.
My name is Maureen Kagpale. First thing is to change the mindset of being employed. We have to start thinking out of the box. We need to start thinking for our own selves. We need to start thinking about developmental projects, like innovative ideas.
Africa, rise up. I love my Africa, rise up. I love your Africa. welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. Today we're looking at some of the possible solutions to youth unemployment in Africa. Now, it's clear that the rising number of young people on the continent could be an opportunity, a great opportunity to take the continent forward in so many ways. But of course, that can only be so if those young people have jobs, have opportunities. And one of the ways to solve the persistent issue of youth unemployment would be to create an environment where the youth acquire the right skills and knowledge to meet the changing job market, to meet the demands, to avoid a situation where we have an oversupply of certain skills. And obviously, as a result of that, we'll have an undersupply of positions. There's general recognition, though, that government alone cannot solve this issue. There needs to be active support by the private sector, by NGOs, etc. And these interventions could come in the form of small business support or a youth wage subsidy. Others could play the role of matching job seekers and employers. Now, there's clearly a role for all of us to play in this space.
Marlon Parker is a South African entrepreneur. Since 2008, Marlon, a self-taught computer programmer, has been running R Labs, a social enterprise incubator based in Cape Town. Marlon is using information technology to reach out to vulnerable youth and help them design practical technology-based solutions that address social challenges in their communities. In the process, he says, they gain skills for employment and create opportunities for self-employment.
For me, it never came as a light bulb moment. And I think I always want to encourage people as well. You know, don't wait for that light bulb moment. I mean, some people even go and stand underneath light bulbs, you know, just in case it happens, you know. But sometimes these things happen gradually. It just needs you to make a decision. Right. That, you know what, I'm actually just going to do something. It doesn't have to be a big thing, but I'm going to start somewhere. And the way I thought that would work was I knew technology. That was what I knew.
Mm.
And I thought, how can I leverage this technology as a way for people to share stories of hope?
Right.
So that was it.
To share stories of hope.
That was it. It wasn't even to train people. No,
right.
I just started as one guy who was an ex-drug addict, ex-gang member. And he had an amazing story. And I said, you know, maybe just... I introduced him to Twitter and Facebook and get him into blogging and said, listen, just write your story and share your story. Who knows? Someone out there might be able inspired. To learn from you or inspired by what you're doing.
It has morphed into this tech hub, obviously. You know, the stories of... I've been reading a lot about you and some of the work, the amazing work that you've been doing in the community. What have you been able to achieve so far? Tell us about where you are right now in terms of... some of the impact that you feel like you've had in the community.
And I mean, from that point on, we then established a academy where we train people on a variety of skills, not just technical skills. It ranges from technology to vocational skills.
We've obviously jumped a lot of stories because from one ex-drug convict telling their story to building an academy, there's a lot that happened in between there.
I mean, at the heart of it was that people from the community came to say, hey, we also learn how to do that. So they came asking for training, but that was never the intention. So even in the way we do training, we still have a very strong storytelling component. It's about sharing your stories. It's about understanding that I'm not alone in this.
Mm.
And through that, it was the community that actually drove the
project. Like, you know, we can tell our stories, but we can also learn how to program.
So they started saying, oh, can't we do this? Can't we do that? I said, okay, let's do it, you know.
That's amazing.
And out of that, we then realized we have to formalize this whole training exercise. So we established an academy where people apply for scholarships. And we currently kind of offer something in the range of about just over 5,000 scholarships a year now for people training at our academies.
Wow. How many? You have one academy?
It's a big academy, but we have different sites.
Okay.
Campuses.
Oh, different campuses. So you moved from just one, you know,
one location. So we were in one small room.
How did you expand that fast?
Yeah, so it started in 2008. We were, for the first 3 years, we were in one room, which is most probably the size of the little studio that we're in.
Mm.
And 2008 is not long ago.
It's not too long ago.
Upfront has been on air since 2007, so I kind of remember 2008. You know, that's like 7 years ago, 8 years ago.
This is our seventh year.
You moved from a room that is as big as this studio to creating campuses all over the community. That's amazing. How were you able to transform that fast?
And we understood that at the heart of what we're doing is about people and instilling hope in people. And we were using technology as a mechanism to train people in making them understand, listen, firstly, it's about you as a person, but technology is purely an enabler that you could use to either access opportunities, you can develop skills using technology that will make you a bit more employable, or at the same time, if you are willing to even take it a bit further, you can teach yourself, and we introduce you to how you can actually build things using technology. So out of the academy, from there, then started merging into this thing called a living lab, which means it's a space in the community where people come. If you have a crazy idea, and we love crazy ideas, right, that you believe can actually help change your community, then we will actually help you to turn it into a reality.
So a hub, basically.
Yeah, so it's kind
like of like an incubator.
That's where the kind of like the tech hub thing came around, in our instance at least. But it's very, like I said, it's very grassroots.
What's the population you're talking about? How many people are we talking about, like in terms of reach?
That come through?
No, like you're serving the community. Like, are we talking about 1,000 people? The people who are, so you were in Cape Town Flats.
The Cape Flats alone has got, it's probably about 3 to 4 million people. And what we started doing was, and people would come from all over. The nice thing about it was, not only did we have people coming from difficult communities or marginalized communities, we even started having people coming from
affluent communities.
Areas
because they liked what you're doing.
And they actually wanted to also learn these kind of skills.
That was Marlon Parker of Arrow Labs. Marlon Parker is a social entrepreneur based in Cape Town. You can find more of our conversation with Marlon Parker online. We had a very long conversation. We can't play all of it here in the show, but you can find more of it on our website or on our blog, or you can find out our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/upfrontafrica.
Finishing my last year in university, and I don't want to be employed 5 years from now. I want to have my own project that I'm running. But the problem that I have is the capital. I have the ideas, but I don't have the facilitation. So if I have the idea and I get facilitation, which I would encourage the government to do, provide that kind of minimal capital at least, without having to present a lot of collateral or these other big things that require a lot of money, that as a youth I don't have. That would help me to develop my idea.
My name is Edmund Kajiri. I work for the East African newspaper here in Kigali, Rwanda. Personally, I think the only solution to youth unemployment is to encourage innovation in ICT and technology. Why? ICT and technology today is a game changer. If we look where we are and where the world is going right now, everything happens on a click. Everything happens on a mobile phone. Money transfers, you know, applications. Everything really happens with ICT and technology. So if there's anything that has to turn around youth unemployment and make our youth very proactive and productive, it is ICT.
Yeah. As one of the most populous countries in Africa, if not the most populous, Nigeria faces high rates of unemployment among its youth. In rural areas, secondary school graduates account for the majority of the unemployed. Esther Ashade says that although thousands of young people graduate each year from Nigerian schools, universities, and technical colleges, many lack the job-ready skills demanded by employers today. Esther started an after-school program that helps young students and graduates to improve their employability through career guidance and volunteer experiences.
There's a mismatch between the educational systems and the skills that these young persons have, and then, of course, the requirements of the workplace.
Of the job, right.
So what we do in our program is to try and teach young persons these soft skills, all the skills that they need to know, the question of value, which is actually what is actually the driving force to every employment, to every vacancy that you see at the workplace, for them to be able to understand, you know, the wordings of the workplace. How does it work? What are the expectations? So we have different programs for different young persons, you know, from secondary school and then till at the graduate level. So we run trainings for graduates, training even for undergraduates on the workplace. So at that point in time, they already can start planning for their graduation. It's really not something that is traditional in Africa for you to plan for their for your graduation.
Right.
I mean, you get into school, you know, you study all the 16 subjects and then you read hard, study hard, sometimes cram, get into the exam hall, write the exams, you know, get your degree, and you have this fantastic paper from any university or a secondary school, and there goes your degree. You know, but
in essence, it's useless because you can't really apply it anywhere.
Exactly,
because you lack. Let's talk about the soft skills. Some of the soft skills that are necessary. You talked about value.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by value? Like the value of the job, the value sets, the value system. What do you mean?
First of all, of course, we know as Africans, we actually have a good value system. I mean, we are grown to be respectful. But that's not really the value that I want to talk about.
Mm.
That value is really necessary to be able to also survive in the workplace. But the value that I really like driving at in the workplace is actually the value that you bring to the table as a potential employee.
You personally.
Exactly. So, for example, a company needs someone who has skills. For example, say they want to employ a social media person.
Right.
To
run their social media program.
Exactly, to run their social media strategy. And here you are, you're a graduate and you cannot even use the computer.
Right.
That's like a huge error. You know, so, I mean, value is in terms of a lot of young persons, which is actually one of the things that just sets me aback at some point. I really don't understand, like, where the issue is. I'm like, when some young persons, you know, complain, there are no jobs, government is not providing jobs, private sector are not providing jobs. And I always like throwing the questions. I mean, and it's really evident in the work that we do when we run classes for young persons. They are like, wow, that they thought companies actually existed to employ people. I'm like, no, that's not the way it works.
Right.
But I mean, this is, you know, how we've been grown,
right,
how we've been socialized to believe that. I mean, government is supposed to provide jobs. Government is supposed to fix every road. I mean, we all know the role of government.
Right.
But at the same time, one of the things that always comes out from our trainings is that a lot of young persons don't realize that there is a personal responsibility to self-development.
Right.
There's a personal responsibility to career development. There's a personal responsibility to how far you get in life.
Oh, to even national development.
Exactly.
You don't have to wait
Fantastic.
For the government to do everything for
Thank
you.
You.
Right.
You know, to even national development. Mm. So it's not the question that my father died, my uncle died, my father or my uncle refused to send me to school, or, you know, all the stories that we regularly hear. First of all, the mindset change. You are responsible for your success. You are responsible for your failure.
Right.
And it's not the role of your father or government. I mean, yes, government has some roles to do, but how are you prepared for the 21st century?
Mike Adekunle, also known as Mike Magic from Nigeria, is a media personality. He has worked in Nigeria's entertainment industry. One of his jobs was a presenter on the radio, Cool FM. He tells us a bit about his interesting story and what it takes to make it happen as a young person in any job market.
Actually, my very first job was selling meat pies and
selling
donuts
meat pies.
And yeah.
Wow. On the street?
It was
a little kiosk.
I had a basket full of meat pies and things, and we would go into corporate offices. Mm. It was a bank. This lady had a contract to supply them with like breakfast and stuff. So I would take my basket, literally go around the bank, the workers, and they would look at what I had, buy what they wanted, and then I would go into their kitchenette and wait. And then during lunchtime, some more people would come and buy the rest. And that was it. Then
well, that was your little hassle.
That was my first hustle, yeah.
That's interesting. And that, you know, that many people would look at that and say they would shun it. And that's the problem
definitely.
With many young people.
Yeah, especially from the kind of background that I had. Mm. I mean, I was from middle class.
Right.
So I was in a private school, very good school. Most people would not do that.
Right. They would look down on upon
selling meat pies. Right. Really? But I knew at the time that, you know, it was just, I guess I was raised right. Let me thank my parents. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Dad.
you know? Felt that was a gateway for you to...
Exactly. And I did meet people. People remembered my face and they looked at me because I spoke very well. Mm. I was obviously educated and I was doing this and they were like, wow.
Why are you selling meat pies?
Exactly.
And that was in high school, right out of high school.
Right out of high school.
Right before you get into college.
Yes. But when I did get into college, again, I was in Lagos. And Lagos, there's the mentality of the hustlers in Lagos. Everybody hustles. There's a lot of moving backwards and forwards. And and you see people with affluence. You see people with money. So there's a lot of ambition. And you want to be one of those people. So, and I was very interested in media. So I decided I was going to be somebody big in entertainment. I just made up in my mind. So I was practicing on my own. I got the opportunity when my older sister had a friend who was a producer. And I told him I wanted
to get into radio,
mm-hmm. TV, whatever. And he actually offered to train me. So he started training me unofficially to host one of his shows. It was going to be a TV show. You know, and I was still in university studying building construction at the same time.
Nothing to do with entertainment
at all. That's another story entirely. But bottom line is, I didn't get paid by this man, but I got trained. It was hard for me to get into media, but I was really determined.
Say this kind of dance, they do like say, you don't use juju. Say this kind of dance, they do like say, you don't make me mad, oh. Say this kind of dance, they do like say, you don't make me crazy.
So over 10 million people enter the job market each year around the continent. But unemployment still hovers at around 13%. Sega Bilacho is a change manager and global digital media strategist at Ashoka. Her organization is currently running a challenge for people to share ideas on how to increase employment opportunities for young people in Africa.
We had identified social entrepreneurs that are thinking differently about the employment ecosystem in the continent. And there are a few things that we've been able to learn from them. So to create new pathways for employment and to redefine employment, first, the biggest thing is you have to put young people in charge. You have to create solutions that are allowing them to expand on skill sets, but not only to work on employability, but to be able to figure out how they create value in the marketplace and how they read the marketplace themselves. We've also learned that you have to redefine the jobs and the kind of jobs that we're talking about, the informal sector, the formal sector. I mean, the world is changing, but specifically in Africa, there are a lot of opportunities and there are a lot of new industries that are really popping out.
So Tsega, tell us about the challenge that you are running and how people can get involved.
It's called the Future Forward Youth Innovations for Employment in Africa Challenge. Mm. It's run on changemakers.com/futureforward. It's open to any young person in the continent that has operations in sub-Saharan Africa. And right now we have 61 entries. We've been running for a few weeks now. It closes on November 5th. So we're looking for more entrants.
You told me about one of the innovative ideas was this yoga studio, lady who started a yoga studio in Kenya. How does that work? Talk to us about some of the other ideas that you have come across that you find interesting as young people continue to find innovative ways to tackle this issue of youth unemployment on the continent?
Yeah, so the point about actually the yoga thing that's really striking to me are some of the impact that has been. So there are 150 students providing 350 free courses to over 6,000 people.
Wow.
And this is just in Kenya. So, you know, the Africa Yoga Project is expanding. And so, you know, that's one of the Paige predicts that in 5 years, 100,000 middle and upper middle class Kenyans and other Africans will be kind of a part of this industry. So, you know, that's one of the things. Another interesting idea, I mean, you've talked to Marlon, it's really a lot of what he does is also putting young people in charge, same as what Paige does, where he uses IT skills training to take young people who are in really vulnerable situations. So they might be ex-convicts, single mothers, dropouts, and he places them in positions where they can become the IT innovators of, you know, South Africa or, you know, township areas. Another one that I think is actually really fascinating is Dorian. She runs Young Africa, and it's a hub that really kind of uses the assets of the community to bring not only skills training, but entrepreneurship development. So, for example, you have different small enterprises that need space and that need capacity building. So you have carpenters and electricians and solar panel builders and maybe graphic designers.
Or programmers.
Exactly. Right. But they have such low capacity. They don't have space. They don't know how to kind of build up their own business. She brings them and the young people who are unemployed into the same space. And there's a need and a value that they create for each other.
Mm.
Because these small entrepreneurs are able to plug into the young people, train them as apprentices, but also access to a larger network.
What will your choice be based on for the winning submission?
First is that innovative idea. We are looking for young people thinking differently, just like, you know, the examples that we'd been discussing. The second is the scalability. And so the scalability not only of them being to expand operations, but for them to have their model kind of be copied somewhere else, and that idea can resolve, you know, youth unemployment,
right,
in a different region, in a different context. The third is sustainability. So we talked about how Dorian and Young Africa have this model where, you know, the small scale entrepreneurs and the young people are coming in, and that hub is there, and they don't need external funding. They themselves are kind of through that business space.
They're self-sustaining.
They're self-sustaining space.
Mm.
And so those are some of the criteria that we're looking at.
But Ashoka has kind of already selected some of those entrepreneurs on the continent that are running these new interesting initiatives. How are they going to be involved in this competition?
Yeah, so the social entrepreneurs that have been identified as part of the Future Forward project, there are 25 of them. We've completed the selection of these systems changing level social entrepreneurs, and now
that has nothing to do with the competition.
That has nothing to do with the competition. But then the competition is for young Africans that are under the age of 30.
Just to make it clear that the youth employment conversation is not ending. You'll continue it even after this competition.
The youth employment conversation is continuing on. So, as we're doing this selection of social entrepreneurs and young innovators, we're continuing an online and ongoing conversation where we have webinars and content for other people who are thinking about youth employment challenges to learn from these disruptive ideas, but also to share their own ideas around youth employment. So that will continue on for the rest of the year. And Ashoka, I mean, will continue to identify social entrepreneurs on youth employment, but also other issues, other social issues.
Tega is a change manager and digital media strategist at Ashoka here in Washington, D.C. I want to thank all our listeners and all our contributors to the show today. We'll catch you again next week right here on The Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at UpfrontAfrica. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com. Until next time.